listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And welcome to the Legal Hour. As you know, we have somebody along from Hutchinson Legal every second Wednesday of the month between 1 and 2. And today we've got the big chief, Grant Hutchinson, and also Daryl Mitter, and he's the general manager of Your Lawyer, which is a division of Hutchinson Lawyers. Welcome, gentlemen.
G'day. Thanks. Good to be with you, Alan.
Good to be with you too, Grant. Now, we sent you along with all the people last month with some questions.
Yeah, and they were great questions.
You're the one for the next week, month. But anyway.
Okay, so the first one was about facial recognition ID,
yes.
And the second one about bail. If I can just run through those with you, because whoever thought up these questions, great questions. So facial recognition identification technology is relatively new.
Yep.
And as we know, it's hard for the legislature to keep up with the reforms in technology, just the latest technological
yep.
development. Yet the Privacy Act seems to have a bit of coverage here. So the question here, though, is, and there was a major store that it was reported on recently, but there are many cases, particularly in the UK and the US, but also Australia too, of stores that use facial recognition technology to identify thieves.
Yep. Well, it's mainly what it's for, isn't it?
Well, let's hope it's just for that. I remember when I was asked by a major shopping centre, and that's another day, but they were talking about how you could actually identify where people are, what they touch, and a moment after they leave the store, you can send them an SMS, that pink cardigan's 20% off. It's just amazing what
yep.
they could do. So let's hope it's not for marketing purposes,
yep.
but they said it was just to, let's say it was just to keep out thieves. And police can use the data to arrest and prosecute those that are identified,
yep.
but they need to be careful. Facial recognition technology is not perfect.
Yep.
So it captures and stores people's what's called a face print. Instead of a fingerprint, your face print.
Yep.
Believe it or not, your ears are quite telling. When you go internationally, you watch it how you can't counterfeit ears. You can do things with your face, but it's hard with your ears. So anyway, so it's considered to be a very sensitive. This is the idea of capturing faces and the face print as a highly sensitive biometric data, which should be under the Australian privacy law. In the UK, it's understood that police park in white vans on city streets with cameras attached to the roofs, and they scan thousands of people's faces as they wait for a match and they look for somebody on their watch list.
Yep.
But this has led to arrests of hundreds of people in the last year alone. However, there are many cases of misidentification. Just think how you'd feel.
Yeah.
You're misidentified as a criminal. So about one in 40 cases are false positives.
Yep.
And for video surveillance, the footage and the facial recognition has caused multiple people to be wrongly accused, questioned, arrested, even imprisoned for a period of time. And you know what can happen in prison.
Oh, yeah. Let's not go there. No, I don't. I've never been there, so I don't want to go there.
Yeah, Alan, you keep saying that. Okay. Now, often the cases get dropped, but it's just think of it. You're out with your wife and kids and the police pull you in and it causes all sorts of problems. So there's been cases where people have actually been arrested, detained, and there was a case in America where a man wrongly identified by facial recognition technology was assaulted while in jail for nearly 2 weeks and he was left with lifelong injuries. He wasn't prepared for jail when he was just... So there's damages and what could happen there. I've had cases where a person has had the same name and somebody's come after their property, so they've got the sheriff out to sell because it was the same name as somebody else, and I've had to convince them and show them it was a different person. But facial recognition, it happens so quickly.
Well, and the problem is that must be... images have to be stored somewhere, don't they? Otherwise, it's not going to work. So what happens if you wrongly, like the person in front of you does something wrong, but for some reason it shows your face, then how do you get off?
Is that your defence? I'll tell you what, Alan, it's getting better and better. Anyway.
Let's keep moving on.
there are serious concerns about the technology being used to develop a database of people's faces.
Yes.
However, if no match is found, they say that the facial images is automatically deleted within approximately 4.17 milliseconds.
But then how does that work so that they know the next person when they come in's a crook?
Great question. Alan, I think you need to have... So the Privacy Commission said even that is not good enough. So maybe they're allowed to keep a database of... I've been in stores in the country and other places where... in country stores and, other, and even one in Croydon where they have all these photos of people that have been caught shoplifting. Yeah. Well, I think they're allowed to keep those. Yeah, like when they know they've got a criminal, but so they've got 4.17 milliseconds to see whether somebody comes up on there.
And you'd have to be pretty certain that that one that you printed off is in fact the person.
Well, you'd want to be sure. And so whether you can keep it, and that's a good question, let me not give legal advice on that, but you would have thought if they've caught somebody and they've been convicted, there would be less protections than just Joe Blow.
I don't disagree with that.
Walks through. So if it was, so these stores are saying they're not using it for marketing, tracking customers' behaviour, but instead it's simply to try to identify people so they can protect their staff from, you know, people that might have been violent in the past or had other... So they can try to sell it on, you know, looking after their staff. So in November 2024, Bunnings was subject to a two-year investigation by... or it concluded... the Office of Australian Information Commissioner, and they found to have breached the laws. So,
and I believe they're appealing, aren't they?
I think I see a nod in another direction. Why not? Lawyers need lawyers need the work. So it's Christmas coming. So, but I think the other question is, how do you identify consent? Have you given consent if in an obscure place it says in this store we use? We use facial recognition cameras on these premises.
It should be at the front door, so you know when you walk in the door, shouldn't it?
Well, you'd think that it should be somewhere where people are aware and they can actually see and they give informed consent. So having it tucked away. There used to be what's called the ticket cases, the back of ticket cases. So on, these are very old cases, but in the days of railways and you'd get a ticket, on the back would be all the terms and conditions.
Yeah, and no one ever read them.
But if you've regularly caught a bus or a train, you'd be expected to have... Ultimately, you're responsible to have done something. So, in very fine print, probably not something allowed these days, but could it be that on the back of their receipts they start to put things about this? I doubt that they will, because I think they just want... Well, I don't think anybody's said they've been told too often that there's facial recognition going on.
Grant, I've got to take a quick break.
Sure.
And then I believe you've
the
got one more question.
Is bail.
And then you've got to get away. So let's just take a quick break and we're back with more.
Now
to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to the Legal Hour. We've got the head honcho Grant and the head honcho Daryl, and we're talking all legal things. Now, the elusive bail comes up time and time again.
Yeah, and this is not our favourite topic. It seems to be listeners, and make the... Yeah.
And I should make the point, because I know I've had people ring up and say, oh, I didn't like what Grant said. Well, that's not what the question are. We ask him a question. He's not... It might not be his actual idea of what he thinks himself, but we ask him the law. We don't ask him to interpret it. We ask him to tell us what the law is. So Grant is just telling you the law.
I'm telling it like it is, like Kerrigan towing. I just tell you as it is. So there were new bail amendments that came into force in March of this year, and the amendments were made to the Act of 1977, and basically it made it easier to get bail.
Yes.
Now, this is doesn't go down well in many places, I suppose, unless you're in the criminal fraternity, and or there may be some other people. The reform was the government said it was to make laws fairer and reduce the disproportionate impact felt by women, children and Aboriginal people. Now, if that's what was achieved, I think people would sing a different tune about this, but so what they've done is they've removed what's called the double uplift effect.
What's a double uplift?
That's a great question. It refers to where people have committed offences while on bail.
Yes.
So if you've done that, normally it was the test to get bail uplifted to become more serious. So the amendments removed this so that people who commit a minor offence, like shoplifting, will not face the onerous exceptional circumstances test for bail because they're before the court. So it used to be you've got to show exceptional circumstances why you should get bail if you're out on bail and you do another thing, even if it's a what could be considered not as serious as the first offence. So it could be shoplifting is serious if you're, serious, but it's not the same as, other things that, assaulting people, etc.
But and I'm not asking you for your opinion here because that's not fair, but, I mean, I was talking to a policeman the other day and some of these kids are on 65 and 70 lots of bail. He claims that he knows the one that's on the 72nd lot of bail. Now, if you didn't take those 1, 2 and 3, and I'm not asking your opinion, then you're not going to take now 69, 70 and 71, are you?
I've heard of the case, so this may not be true, it may be urban mythology, where somebody turned up in a stolen car to court and then stole another one for the trip back. They want to keep a vehicle with enough fuel in it. Anyway, let's just let's not go there. So, I suppose I did. Anyway, what's an unacceptable risk test? Now, the focus is on does it endanger the safety and welfare of other people rather than is there a risk of the person offending again? So they don't ask, is there a risk of this person offending again when deciding bail? Is it, but rather, what's the safety and welfare of other persons? So you can understand if it was shoplifting, it's not the same as...
But then...
I'm not justifying it.
No, I know you're not. And I'm not going to ask you to, because that's not fair. You're only telling us what the law says, and I understand that.
And so therefore, the thought was, look, what happened in the particular case was that there was a... What brought around about these amendments was that there was the death of an Indigenous woman, Veronica Nelson, in January 2020, while she was being held on remand. She'd been refused bail. I think she'd actually, she'd gone and stolen some perfume or something. Look, I may have that wrong, but it was a shoplifting.
Minor case.
That's what moved her from being on bail to, because, she had to make out exceptional circumstances. It wasn't about the safety. It was.
Yep.
So they've changed the test. Does that make sense? So it has made it easier, and it's not, what will happen to people who get multiple bail time? Well, the offence of committing an indictable offence while on bail for another indictable offence has been removed under the offence. So So the one thing that's there is if you fail to appear on bail, this is still retained as something that's serious. So if they choose not to turn up, so depending on the impact of the crime on the safety of the community, there may be a denial of bail ultimately. But does that answer that one? Do you want me to quickly deal with...
Yes, I want you to talk about fire. I know you've got to get away.
I know, but...
you're going to have...
No, that's okay.
You're going to have to answer to somebody a lot higher than me if you were late.
Yeah, I know. It's so, look, with the Australian summer season approaching, many Victorians, and this is coming from an article in the Law Institute Journal, and can I just say it's a great little article written by Ellen Clayton Green. And so basically, what do you do if somebody has left flammable material or
long
even
grass?
Well, what's worse is what about they're storing things that create a hazard, hazardous chemicals, etc. If then there's a fire on their property that leads to your property, even if you've done what you can, could there be a common law claim?
Could there? I don't know.
Well, I think the first thing is to, actively... So normally you'd like to think that neighbours would get together, they'd cut the grass and, clear vegetation growth and remove fallen branches and other combustible materials. That's what you'd like to think.
Yep.
And they'd work with their neighbours on shared boundaries. But
what happens?
No, it doesn't always happen. No. And look, it could be for particular circumstances. Somebody could be sick that year. They could have had a... So all sorts of circumstances, but... And so there's a worthwhile article, and if people are interested, I'm happy to send them a copy if they just ring the office. Can I give the number?
Yep.
9870. 9870 again, so it repeats. 9870. 9870. Just say, look, we have a copy of the article sent to us, and I'm assuming I can take a couple of copies and send them out to the first two or to whoever. I don't want to be infringing copyright. It's just a great article, and it asks some good questions. But you'd want to be observing the planning requirements.
Yep.
If there's often... and also, the old theory that just let it go and, nature will take care of things is no longer the accepted science in this area. So,
and the other problem you've got is that if any sort of fire's next door, the fire itself doesn't have to come to your place. It can just spot, and particularly if you've got leaves up in the spouting and all that, and before you know where your house is. Grant, I know you've got to get away. Thank you for your time over the last 12 months. We always have a lot of fun with Hutchinson Legal.
Particularly around Valentine's Day.
But,
Can I say season's greetings to you and the listeners? It's fabulous to you, Greg, and everybody. It's a real privilege for us to be a part of this.
Well,
so thank you.
And we look forward to you being part of us in 2025.
Okay, take care, mate.
No worries. Thanks very much. Thanks.
listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, unfortunately, Grant had to leave us, and he's gone off to do something that's far more important for his family, so we acknowledge that, and we hope it goes well. I have with me Darryl. Now, he's the general manager of Your Lawyer, which is a division of Hutchison Legal. So, Darryl, first of all, I know there are a couple of topics we're going to talk to you about. How long have you been with Your Lawyer?
5 years today, in fact. I got a note on my email when I'd logged in congratulating me for 5 years being with Your Lawyer. So, yeah, it's a milestone day.
That's terrific. What got you involved in the law?
Well, I was working for Grant as running the company Your Lawyer.
Yep.
And then COVID came along. And yep. I took the opportunity during COVID to get my registration as a migration agent.
Yep.
And so that's my extent of law. I'm not actually a lawyer,
yep.
So I can't comment on the things that Grant was commenting on before.
No.
As a lawyer, we're not allowed to do that.
Yep.
But yeah, when it comes to migration, I can talk about that till the cows come home.
So what got you involved in migration?
Yeah, it was a quick route.
Well,
I guess.
I just ask you? We've jumped ahead a bit too far. Like, obviously, you went through school, you did uni or whatever you did, and then did you drift into legal services, or were you in another field altogether?
My background is very diverse. I started out with an oil company, one of the biggest companies in the world, and then ended up at one stage working for a small family agricultural supplies firm. I've run a rail maintenance company. I've been involved in a startup web design company, startup rail freight company.
Yep.
So I've done quite a few things along the journey. And so that's why I'm a general manager. I'm a generalist in the true sense of the term.
All right. So at some stage, you've been in oil and you've been in all sorts of things. Some stage made you decide that you wanted to get involved in immigration. Was there a particular thing that happened in your life that said, I want to get into immigration, or how did you drift into it?
Yeah, good question. Drift is the right word.
Yeah.
Look, the thing with Your Lawyer and the work that we do, as opposed to, say, some other parts of areas of law, is that we're really looking to help people with a brighter tomorrow. And that's, you know, whether we're dealing with victims of crime who are, you know, picking themselves up after some traumatic event, or even, you know, in personal injury. The thing with migration is that we're also about giving people a brighter tomorrow, and it's just great when we can have a partner visa that comes through and allows somebody, you know, to marry their beloved person or getting a job in Australia.
But what made you personally decide to get... Was there something in your life that happened or in your family's life that thought, apart from all these other things, you've still honed in on immigration.
Yeah.
Is there a reason for that? Is what I'm trying to find out.
Yeah, no, there's no particular reason. There is a part of me that thinks that I probably should have been a lawyer earlier on in my career.
Yep.
Because I do like the law, and I do like interpreting statutes, and I do like administering justice and those things. And I'm not a young person anymore, and so migration was a two-year course. And that allows me to do something in the law rather than actually having to go through and do a law degree and then do PLT. And
so you don't think you'll ever do that?
No, I don't. I think it's beyond me now. To specialise in migration, the law in migration is changing weekly. So to keep up to date, we had, and we'll talk about this later, but there was new laws that came in on Saturday. And there's laws coming out every week. With changes in regulations and changes in legislative instruments and those sorts of things. So to keep up with migration is enough, and to specialise
in that. Without trying to study else.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk. We know a bit about you now. Let's find out a bit about immigration.
Cross, 13 hours on a bus. I press my glass and watch the white lines rushing past. And all around me felt like all inside me, and my body left me and my soul went running. Have you ever seen King's Cross when the rain is falling soft? I came in on the evening bus from Oxford Street. I cut across, and if the rain don't fall too hard, everything shines just like a postcard. Everything goes on just the same.
Listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, Daryl, we've found a little bit about yourself. Immigration, you were saying the rules are changing almost weekly. So some changes came in, I think you said, on Saturday. So what sort of changes are they in general that come in?
Yeah, so Saturday was actually a fairly major change. It was a change of name to one of the visas itself, being the 482 visa, which is the temporary skilled shortage visa,
right,
which is now called a skilled in demand visa. And the 482 has been, it replaced a commonly known visa called the 457. So even before I got into this, the 457s were around, and people know that that's a temporary visa which brings people, brings a lot of people to Australia for work, for skills shortage.
That's visas. Where we're short of the skills,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. And so they've changed that now because the skills list got out of whack.
I see the other day where they even had brothels on it.
Yes. They've made it an exclusion of a brothel manager now, but yes, the skills list has been updated. They've looked at particularly things in the construction, cybersecurity, education, aged care, that sort of place. So that they've also relaxed that a little bit, so you only need 1 year experience now rather than two, which is probably not meaningful to many people, but it's huge to employers. And that's what the whole migration process, or this visa, is about, is what employers can do to fill skill shortages where they can't get Australian residents or citizens to actually fill those positions.
When you said it's 1 year experience, you talk about 1 year's experience overseas, or...?
Well, there's actually, for each occupation, there's what they call a skills assessment, and those skills need to be met, and that can include experience overseas.
Right.
What they're talking about here is just a local skills experience with readiness to actually do the job. So it can be overseas, but it's like if you're a chef, you need to have you know, multiple years of experience just to qualify as a chef anyway.
Yep.
And so you satisfy the visa requirements anyway. But there's now three streams to this visa, so there's different ways of coming. One is that basic core skills where you need an employer to say, I need your skills, and to identify the occupation and to identify you that you're a match for that. And then you need a minimum level of English sort of standards. Then and those occupations...
Can I just ask you on that? I don't like to interrupt.
No, go for it.
But you mentioned occupation. So say I'm an employer and I'll say I'm in the building industry and I say I can't get any bricklayers. So if I apply and say, look, I just can't get bricklayers, how does the government go looking for that, or do they have just looked through people who've applied to come here and say, this is, you know, we've got a bricklayer here, or do they let it be known overseas we're looking for bricklayers? How does that work?
That's an interesting question. It's a good question. The government consults with the job skills bodies, the authorities,
yep.
and says, this is what Australia is lacking in terms of skills.
Yep.
And that's where these lists actually come from. So it's a top level, but quite a detailed thing that's happened over a number of years
yep.
to get to the where we are in 2024 with the skills list.
Yep.
And they say that these are the skills that industry is crying out for.
Yep.
But your question is, if you're the actual builder and you've put out ads and you can't actually yep. get anybody, then the natural way of going is to have a look at the standard visas and say, can I bring somebody in on this visa, like this skills in demand visa?
So we'll say I can. So then how do I get the work out?
So then you might be advertising overseas.
Right, so it's still up to the employer.
You've got to find that match.
Right, that's what I was trying to
get. That match.
Yeah. I thought maybe the government had listed all these people, but no.
We almost do, because when overseas workers look for jobs in Australia, they end up calling us and saying, "Can you find me a job in Australia?" But there are people who will do the match. But the other way of going is if that visa doesn't exactly fit your needs, there's now what they call also labour agreements. So that you can actually use a company-specific agreement where the rules don't fit your particular circumstances, you can actually do a bespoke agreement to get people across to Australia. And that's happening more and more because these lists are being whittled down and refined, and certain people, are coming off them. They've already earmarked, for example, that childcare managers are likely to come off the list. There's 450 occupations, more than 450 occupations on the list at the moment.
Yep.
They've got a list of occupations which they think will come off the list next time it's refined. So childcare centre managers is one of those occupations which is likely to come off.
So when you say managers, you're not talking about childcare workers. Are they separate or...?
So there's a group called the Australian New Zealand... ANSCO, Australia, New Zealand, I'm not going to remember the whole of that.
<Doesn't matter. laughs> But
ANSCO is a body across Australia and New Zealand which actually defines all the occupations that we think we have. And I think Grant was talking before about trying to keep up with technologies and things. I mean, they are way behind in terms of, and there's this one default code they use for everything else that we haven't yet defined. But there's these occupations which are clearly defined, and there are clear people, bodies out there that are skills assessing authorities. So in a computer sense, there's an ICT body that will actually will actually accredit you as having the skills in that particular area. And so you actually have to, in your construction environment, for example, you actually have to prove that you're a bricklayer with bricklayer skills, and there's the TRA, the Trades Registration Authority, that will actually check your skills in that area.
Yep.
If you've got those skills, then you marry up in the occupation. Then you need all these other things that to do with age or to do with English speaking skills or whatever that might assist you in terms of points. And then we as migration agents actually go through and say, well, these are the options you've got in terms of visas. You might be employer sponsored, you may come over independently, you may be able to apply and say, I have these skills, I want to come to Australia, I have enough of an educational background and English speaking background, and I'm the right age group and all these other things that gets me a really high points value.
Oh, right.
And the Department of Home Affairs will say, beauty, you can come in. You're someone that we'd like to have here in Australia.
And are those visas then ongoing or are they for a term?
So you have a series of visas which are temporary.
Yep.
And then you have a series of visas which are permanent, and many of the temporary, but not all of them, will have pathways to being permanent. Yeah.
I've got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more.
Same old chords. You would complain that I was never around, and we shouldn't hope. No, we shouldn't hope. If love is so easy, then why am I stuck? If life is so smooth, why can't I get enough? Oh, I'm still lost and running. I can't get enough. No, I'm still lost and running.
Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And I should just mention, this will be our last legal hour now until February. I'll be always take January off, so you can all have a break and listen to some great music, but I'll be back on the last Wednesday of January, because I've got two or three people that are coming in then, but next week will be the last one, and certainly today we'll have somebody from Hutchison Legal back on the second Wednesday of February. But anyway, we're talking to Daryl from Your Lawyer. Daryl, you said there's some changes coming in, or has come in November for Victims of Crime Act.
Yeah, sure. So the the way we do victims of crime now has changed significantly.
Yep.
It was previously through the Magistrates Court,
right,
through what was called the Victims of Crime Assistance Tribunal.
Heard about that.
Yep.
Yep.
And it's now called the Financial Assistance Scheme, which is run by the Department of Justice and Community Services. So it's under a completely different act, although the nature of and the character of the assistance provided is exactly the same, but it's now actually administered by a department of government rather than by the courts.
Is that to try and speed things up, or is there any particular reason for it?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Victoria was one of the last states to go to an administrative system.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, and it should theoretically speed things up. It should make it easier. It should make it clearer for people. The department is saying that the way that they're doing it, which is now online through a portal, should be easier. We've discovered in the first 2 or 3 weeks that there are some hurdles that perhaps weren't expected.
Yep.
There's a thing called a verification of identity where you actually have to prove who you are before you get started, and that's using another app from Services Victoria, which is problematic. So people can still come through a lawyer to get assistance, and the issues are still the same. The issues about what it is that you get, what assistance you get, how you get around some of the technicalities of, perhaps not reporting it to the police or reporting it late or not assisting police, all those sort of things are still where you'd want a lawyer involved.
Yep. Yeah. So the whole idea of, I mean, obviously the magistrates' courts are pretty full at the moment anyway, since COVID. So the idea of, and they're not sitting every day of the week, so I guess the idea is these people are working 5 days a week, aren't they? So hopefully you churn through the cases a lot quicker.
Absolutely. There is a bit of a backlog at the moment, so anybody out there who's thinking about this, for sure come along and get your application in. But there's a huge backlog because in the last two months we've actually had to get everything out of the old system.
And so nothing was happening, really.
And move it into the new system. Well, actually, a lot was happening in terms of withdrawing applications because the new scheme is theoretically a little bit more generous than the old scheme.
Is it? I was going to ask you that.
Yeah.
Is there, when you say generous, are you talking generously because it's easier or generously because there's a bit more money available?
Theoretically generous because there's a bit more money available. And and the total pool is the same. You know, it's 50 or 60,000 depending on what sort of victim you are.
Yep.
But the amount of what they call special financial assistance has gone, say, from the top level under the old scheme of $10,000 to the top level under the new scheme of $25,000. So, it's a lot more generous in that respect. Yeah.
And I guess when you talk about victims of crime, now, this is only for the victims themselves, isn't it? Like, this is not for a family who says, oh, one of my members of the family, so now we're traumatised. There's nothing for that, is it?
Well, no. In fact, there can be.
Can
so
there?
So that's what we call a secondary victim. So this is for victims of violent crime. This is not for somebody who stole your car.
Yeah.
This is actually violent crime.
Yep.
But if you were a witness or if you were a parent of a child, then there's what they call a secondary victim. I have to be a little bit careful when I get into this sort of topic because of this issue about not being a lawyer.
But no,
my
fine.
Understanding, is quite thorough in this area.
Yep.
So there's primary victims, there's secondary victims, and of course, if somebody is a family member of somebody who's been murdered, then they're what we call a related victim. And so there's financial assistance available for them as well.
Yeah. So fascinating stuff when you get into it. So with this immigration, I just want to go back because we've only got about 30 seconds to go. With the changes, is it designed to make things easier to get people here, or is it just changes for changes?
Well, in 30 seconds, we're not going to get there because there's a lot of politics around the number of people who are coming and what sort of people who are coming. And I think the changes are mostly about the flexibility for those who are here and are moving between employers because some of that's been relaxed as well. And to try and actually identify clearly what occupations we need and, like pickers and, short-term people out in the Yarra Valley.
Yep. Just very quickly, you say if a person comes in under one of these visas, you mentioned moving jobs from employer to employer. Is there a specific time they have to stay at a job before they're able to move on?
Yeah, theoretically they have to stay with the one employer for the entire time, but the government recognises that that doesn't always happen.
Yep.
And so now there's provisions about how long they have to pick up a new job if they yep. want to stay, and how long in total they can actually be out of work.
Darryl, I've got to go. The news is going to start in about 2 seconds flat, so I thank you for your time, and again, Merry Christmas to you and everybody at Your Lawyer and Hutchinson Legal, and we look forward to talking to you in the new year.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks.